Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
Spectrum Business works with small businesses nationwide, so we know that running your own business means doing it all. Marketing, sales, inventory, customer service, and more. Spectrum One for Business helps you keep it all connected for just $49.99 a month. Get fast, reliable internet, advanced Wi-Fi with security shield, and a free mobile line for one low price. Stay connected and do it all with Spectrum One for Business. Only $49.99 a month. Go to spectrum.com/business to learn more. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
This episode is brought to you by Intuit, the technology platform that brings financial confidence with products like TurboTax, Credit Karma, QuickBooks, and MailChimp. You might have learned the recorder in school, but probably not how to navigate the financial world. Luckily, Intuit's on a mission to help with the free Intuit for Education program. It provides students with the lessons to learn essential skills, like how to build credit, file taxes, and budget. Check out their free resources at intuit.com/education.
Hello and welcome to the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Scene, who we've partnered with to deliver all of our England Daily podcasts and videos for the rest of the 2023 World Cup. Starting soon on Wisden.com, Scene will be powering our new interactive videos, allowing you to easily skip to certain segments and find relevant articles, offers and opportunities by simply clicking directly within the video. Champions Trophy qualification secured. England finished their 2023 World Cup with back-to-back wins, handsomely defeating a deflated Pakistan in Calcutta, peaking just before the semi-finals. You would have taken that 6 weeks ago. I'm Yaz Rana, and with me today is Mark Butcher. Mark, where was that 5.5 weeks ago against New Zealand?
Oh, dear. Such a shame, eh? It really is. Conflicting emotions this morning when Joss won yet another toss and decided to bat first, thus ending the contest for any sort of qualification for the semi-finals. But also the other side of it was, at last, you know, thank goodness you stuck them in, weathered the early storm with a bit of movement and compiled runs in the way that all the teams that have been successful in the tournament have done it so far. Just a shame it's come so late in the piece. And with so little riding on it, which is not to say it wasn't a terrific performance. It's just kind of, you know, it kind of doesn't matter now.
Mm. I mean, they batted first, picked Brooke at six, picked Atkinson, and it turned out quite well. No early morning grumblings over WhatsApp today. Azar asked, why couldn't England play like this 4 weeks ago? Tom asked, would England qualify if everyone played each other twice? I thought there was quite an interesting discussion on the commentary about how England were potentially spooked by how badly the first 10 or so overs went with the ball against New Zealand, and how that almost put them off wanting to bat first again in the tournament. How pivotal do you think that was in hindsight? Because they were so poor in the opening overs of the first game of the tournament.
Yeah.
And you know, they potentially put that down to conditions more than they ought to have done.
Well, yeah. I mean, the second part of that, I certainly agree. The first part, I don't hold much truck with it. Let alone the first one. But what I would say was that in the first game against New Zealand, out there batting first in what looked like pretty decent conditions, and they may have improved somewhat later. They failed by about 70 runs to put the score on the board that they should have made, and that was the beginning of the issue with the batting. A lot of the talk has been around the mentality being a little bit negative or not quite as gung-ho as they've been in the past. However, the first game, that's exactly what they were. And it cost them, you know, all the batters got in, they all slogged it up in the air and wandered off. And it kind of cost them a defendable total. And then they bowled badly, pretty much throughout when they were defending 290. But 290 should have been 340. And then maybe they could have got away with a couple of bad overs to begin with as they got into their stride and whatever else. But all kinds of sort of back back trading happens after the event. When it comes down to it, England went there with a squad that was more than capable of making the semi-finals, more than capable. And the fact that they've fallen so far short of that is that there are lots of peripheral reasons around it. But the basic facts are they did not play well enough. None of the players were in any sort of decent form at the times when it mattered.
Mm. You know, I'm picking the abundance of reasons why this tournament went wrong. And obviously a lot of key players were out of form for significant portions of the tournament. I wonder if the form of Bairstow was potentially the most significant, not just his own shortage of runs, but the knock-on effect it had on an out-of-form Joe Root, always coming in early and quite often departing early, and then on Stokes and Butler being exposed to the new ball as well. I mean, Root scored 60 today, but he was struggling for a lot of it. But against the older ball, yeah, he was able to hang in there and provide some sort of platform for the guys after him. This was just the second time all tournament he's not come in the power play. And there's a great stat on TV that this was the first game all tournament that Butler batted in the final 10 overs, which is his traditional strength.
Yeah, no, all of that's correct. And I suppose if you want to keep sort of going backwards, you could say that the decision to leave Jason Roy at home had a knock-on effect on Johnny Bairstow, and therefore they didn't get the starts that they wanted. That will certainly rear its head, I should imagine, as an argument for people. You know, however, Darren Millan made 400 runs and was the outstanding batter for England in the tournament in terms of run scoring and consistency. So you may have to look elsewhere there. I'm kind of bored of trying to think of other reasons. You know, we've talked about all of the things sort of leading into the tournament whereby it kind of didn't feel as though it was given the sort of prominence or the necessity for people to go in there sort of hitting the ground running. It felt as though, a little bit like the T20, we'd gradually get into the tournament, and with 9 games, everything would be all right. And it turned out it wasn't.
Mm. Another thing that went wrong at the start of the tournament was Ben Stokes didn't play the first 3 games. He was absolutely brilliant today. Some of the shots, that reverse sweep was reminiscent of the reverse sweep at Headingley off Nathan Lyon. And it was really interesting seeing him and Root at the crease together, because Root was scratching around, really struggling to even get off strike. And Stokes was striking at 120, 125 for a lot of his innings.
Yeah, Ben Stokes, important player for England. Shocker. I mean, that's why there was no argument from my corner or from most of the other pundits' corner about him being brought back for the World Cup final, because he's just a fabulous cricketer and he drags other people along with him. So of course, him being missing for the first 3 games would have thrown a few sort of spanners in the works anyway. But again, I go back to the fact that they still had more than enough cover and quality around there for that not to have been something that saw them win 3 games out of 9. The only other thing on the Stokes issue really is that he was hobbling around like mad. I hope this diagnosis and operation goes well, and that he's fit and ready for the Test series. Because if you imagine that him being missing a huge influence in a 50-over side is going to make a lot of difference, you just wait and see what happens with England and their certainty in the way that they play Test match cricket if he's not there. So that, for me, is the most important thing.
Mm. It was a really nice farewell from international cricket for David Willey, the guy who described himself as the team donkey before the tournament, was so much more than that in the end, in what has been a difficult period, not just for the team, but him personally. It was a really nice moment, I thought, him getting his 100th wicket, and he batted really well as well, because he's a guy who's played a lot for England over a long period of time, but very rarely been the main man in big moments. So it was nice that, obviously, the World Cup didn't end the way that England wanted it to, but yeah, it was nice. There's a nice ending for him.
Really good. And he's a terrific, wholehearted cricketer, and exactly what any professional would aspire to be at the beginning of their career. And so a brilliant send off for him, and hopefully the offers will come flying in from all over the world for franchise cricket and whatever else, and he can put a decent pension in his pocket for when he finally calls it a day. Again, the other side to David Willey having such a brilliant tournament is that if you'd have turned around at the beginning of it and said that England's outstanding player for the tournament, or the two outstanding players for the tournament, would have been David Willey and Rashid. Perhaps Rashid, not so surprising, but David Willey, absolutely surprising. And that's testament to how good he has been, but also testament to how much the sort of more fancied and more highlighted and heralded players have been so unbelievably quiet. And that, you know, that kind of sums it up for me.
Mm. I mean, people were genuinely quite critical of England's decision to pick three left-arm seamers in the squad, and Willey was very much third choice at the start. Sam Curran played the first game, Rhys Topley played the second game, and it was only when Topley was ruled out of the tournament did Willey get a good go. England were good today, but Pakistan were feeble. Yeah. Their spin didn't really cause England too much trouble, and that's been a feature of England's tournament up until this point. And then with the bat two, they didn't really have the firepower to threaten 340, except when the tail came in and gave it a whack. As poor as England have been, Pakistan have had a really disappointing tournament as well.
Yeah, hugely disappointing. In many of the same ways that England have been disappointing, you know, they're sort of their banker batter in Babar has been quiet. Tactically, you know, leaving Thacker out for the first, you know, two thirds of the tournament was a huge mistake, given the one pacedness of the rest of the batting lineup. Nassim Shah going out of it at the beginning, you know, before it started, was a major blow for their fast bowling ranks. However, you know, Harris Ralph had a really poor tournament for him. And Shaheen was kind of a bit, you know, didn't really have the sort of tournament that he might. And yeah, the spin department was a nightmare. I mean, we highlighted this before it started that, you know, Shadab is you know, form-wise is nowhere with the ball, that Osama Mir might have been a better pick from the beginning. Limited chances that he had, he went okay, but in the midst of like the fast bowlers not firing particularly well, he didn't fare particularly well. And of course he dropped Kohli, didn't he, in the match against India, which is a pretty bad mistake to make at that point in the trip. So all in all, they'll be massively disappointed. There's going to be an inquest here in the UK. I wouldn't fancy those boys turning back to Lahore or Karachi or wherever they get off the plane, because you know, their supporters tend to get mad as hell and let them know about it.
Mm. I mean, one of the saddest things for the tournament was it's not just a sad competition for England. It's the end of one of the best cricket teams this country has ever produced. They'll be remembered more for what they achieved in the previous 7 years as to what happened over the last six or so weeks. Do you think we almost underappreciate, because we still see them so much now, actually how remarkable it was for them to be so dominant for that six, 7 year period, especially given England's relationship with limited overs cricket basically going back to the very start?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I always go out of my way to sort of pump up their tyres as for what they've done, particularly given what had gone before with English white ball cricket. And still feel that they're something, you know, that they are still some of the best players in world cricket. But the reality of it all is that none of them are getting any younger, and the next 50 over World Cup is 4 years away, and a lot of them are going to find a lot of other ways of spending their time between now and then than playing ODI cricket. So, you know, all good things have to come to an end. It's just a massive shame for all of them and their legacies and what they've done for the game that it should finish on such a bum note.
And just on the future, Josh Butler said in the lead up to the Pakistan game that he would like to continue as captain for the West Indies tour that comes up in December at the very least. I guess it was only last year that Joe Root, in the aftermath of a similarly disastrous tour in Australia, he continued the captaincy on a similar tour to the West Indies, timing-wise. Given that that's the only 50-over commitment between this World Cup and the T20 World Cup, and there's no big ODI commitment really until the Australia series in September 2024, would you be fine? I know you said before that you'd probably move Butler on from the captaincy. Would you be fine for the short run that Butler continues in the role, I guess, until the T20 World Cup finishes in May, June?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I think the conversation that needs to happen between himself and I guess it would be Rob Key is, you know, how does he feel his commitment is for getting to the next World Cup? And if he feels as though as a player he wants to be there, then the next question is, what, how do you feel about being captain between now and then, and can you be committed to rebuilding a team in your image much as Owen did after the 2015 World Cup? And if the answer to either of those two things is no, then it's absolutely fine for him to continue. You'd kill to have him in your team, for sure. But starting in December, England has to give a very decision about, okay, who is going to lead this thing forward? Because it's not something that gets built over the last 6 months before a tournament. As Owen showed, you go in there, you decide the style of cricket you want to play, you decide the type of players that you want in that 11, and then you instill in them that belief 100% in the method, and you go forward and give them every opportunity to do it. And if Josh is wavering even slightly in terms of, well, you know, I might not make it to 20, where are we, 2027, any of those things he's not 100% sure about, then you move him on. And for, you know, and this is just my 5 pennies worth for whatever it's worth, I would say to him, we're gonna get somebody else to do it. But that's just my thought on the whole thing. We'd want you around the one day international. We want you to play. We want you to be the brilliant player that you are. But we're gonna look in a different direction to build the thing until 20. However, I'm not entirely sure that that's what's going to happen. I think, but he has to be 100% sure that he's going to make it, particularly if he's going to captain the side.
Mm. Well, cheers for your time, Butch. That's it for this bit of the show. In part two, Ben will join me to talk about Bangladesh, Australia.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with The Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben, that's a pretty good win for Australia, comfortably chasing over 300 without Maxwell in the team. A massive 100 for Mitch Marsh, 177 not out. It looks like England aren't the only team peaking at the right time.
Yeah, I mean, basically the perfect game that Australia could have asked for to just ease them into that semi-finals, Bangladesh sort of putting up like enough of a challenge that it feels like a proper run out, but not so much of one that they'll be too tired or overexerted to come that semi-final game. And yeah, a really, really nice moment for Mitch Marsh, who, you know, is having a brilliant year, but has had a tough couple of weeks with his granddad passing away. That was why he flew away from the World Cup for a bit, and he's back now and back in the same form. And I guess also, you know, he's had a good World Cup in that he got that century in that massive partnership with David Warner earlier in the tournament, but that was his only score above 60, I think. So it's just good to have him ticking this off. So yeah, the perfect game for Australia, being able to rest Glenn Maxwell. I feel like Glenn Maxwell resting just makes his innings against Afghanistan all the better. Like, if he can seem like he's more and more depleted from that innings, then it makes that seem all the more extraordinary that it did that. And Stark having a bit of a rest as well. So yeah, everything sort of ticking along nicely for them. Seven wins on the bounce. And even though I guess South Africa finished second in the group, Australia might go into that as slight favourites considering the 7 wins in a row, but that would just be a cracking game, I think.
Mm. I guess for people who didn't get up at the crack of dawn to watch it, it's noteworthy that Bangladesh scored 300 runs against Australia. Talk us through how that's happened.
Well, I mean, I guess lots of guys got starts and no one kicked on to the score that would have maybe taken them to something that might have actually challenged Australia. So you had, yeah, the openers both getting 36 kind of represents it pretty perfectly. And actually what really hurt them, as much as, you know, Zampa bowled really, really well, took two for 32, those middle overs wickets, no one could get them away. But also two run outs from Marnus Labuschagne really pegged them back through the middle. And that could be notable come the sort of shakedown for semi-final selection. Labuschagne's been ever present throughout this campaign, but has actually, they haven't had a full strength side to pick from, I think, through the whole tournament. And then when Maxwell and Stark come back in, I suppose it'll be two from Smith, Labuschagne, Stornis. Smith made a good half century. Stornis obviously off something with the ball, but Labuschagne with that in the field and just the fact that he's just been around, it will be interesting to see what they do. I guess for Bangladesh, they might take a small crumb of comfort from the fact that Tawhid Hridoy scored 74, looked all right, looked on track for a century before he gets out. But they're really, really small crumbs of comfort for Bangladesh to take. I mean, they came into this tournament as like reasonable dark horses for the semi-finals. Like, I don't think it was ridiculous looking back that we were saying that. And when you go through the stats for it, there's only one guy you can say he's had a good campaign, and that's the 37-year-old Marmadullah, who's batting at number 5 and 6. Like, it's been really, really bleak. And when you add on to that, like, one of the things that made us think they could be quite good was they were building this sort of stable of quicks. And now Alan Donald has left. You hope whoever comes in will be able to carry on that work. And this is the last tournament it must be for that generation of, you know, Mushfiqur, Shakib, obviously Tamim's gone, Marmadullah as well. And although there are a couple of bright players, they have not had good tournaments. And you struggle to see them putting in those consistent contributions to kind of replace what they'll be losing at some point in the near future, I guess.
Mm, yeah, I guess with Bangladesh, it's almost, even if they get into that top eight, it looks like they probably will finish in the top eight. It's more how little they challenged the bigger teams.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most disappointing thing. I don't think it's a massive surprise they finished eighth or finished seventh, eighth or ninth. But it's more how infrequently they challenge the best teams. That's the most disappointing thing, really. What do you think about Australia's chances? India, obviously, the favourites for the competition. But how do you see Australia? Do you think Australia are the most likely rivals to India? Like, they're not a perfect team, but they do have a lot of important players in pretty decent form at the moment, and they also have just a lot of collective memory of winning big games. A lot of that team have won World Cups in all three formats.
Yeah, weirdly, I think I would make Australia slight favourites to beat South Africa. I think they're almost a slightly more rounded team, and partly just because of the depth of rounds that they have. But I'd almost give South Africa a better chance against India, because I think if you're going to beat India, you almost need one or two guys to have one of the games of their lives. And I think that, especially in that South Africa top six, you have players whose ceiling at the moment could be that. I mean, if you look at David Warner, for example, he's had a brilliant World Cup, but he's having a brilliant World Cup kind of on muscle memory. We know that what issues he's got, and we know that he's a very good compiler of runs when conditions are in his favour, and conditions are not going to be in your favour when you face India. Whereas, you know, someone like Quinton de Kock, Aidan Markram, Heinrich Klaassen, I can see them having like a big showing against India in a way that I maybe can't see as much from that Australia lineup. But look, they have obviously hit form at the right time, as you said at the beginning. And Zampa being in form actually is quite big. I mean, Stark's not obviously hit the heights, but that pace attack could, on their day, take a few wickets early on. And then if you're on the back foot against Australia, then you're not going to be able to push on ahead against Zampa very easily. And then you can easily find yourself actually scrabbling up something competitive rather than putting up something imposing. So, yeah, there's definitely a chance that any one of these three teams, I guess, in the semi-finals could be India on their day. You know, India are the best team in the competition and by a considerable distance. But, you know, we've seen enough to suggest that they might just be beatable. And I guess, yeah, I'd put South Africa slightly above them just for that reason, but they've hit form at the right time.
Mm. Either way, that semi-final should be fascinating viewing. That is everything for today. Cheers, Ben. We'll be back for our last group stage daily tomorrow. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Wisden Cricket World Cup Daily podcast, powered by Scene. Once again, Scene are our video partners on wisden.com, helping us to deliver a more engaging and immersive viewing experience across mobile, tablet and desktop. Head to the link in our description to find out more about them.
Sports Social Podcast Network.